Hi, I'm Gary Nall. Always a pleasure to be able to share a positive hour with you. And beginning that hour is the latest on health and healing. This study comes from Columbia University. And it's about taking your B vitamins can reduce the epigenetic effects of air pollution. A study from the Columbia University Mailman School of Public Health showed that B vitamins may play a critical role in reducing the impact of air pollution on the epigenome, further demonstrating the epigenetic effects of air pollution on health. By the way, this is the first study to detail a course of research for developing interventions that prevent or minimize the adverse effects of air pollution on potential and automatic markers. The results are published on the online journal PNAS, a scientific study. And the study conducted with colleagues at Harvard's T.H. Chan School of Public Health and in Sweden, China, Singapore, Mexico, and Canada. So that's good that they found this out. But once again, they are not using Occam razor's philosophy. Use the razor to cut through the meat to get to the bone. Meaning, metaphorically, that don't try to confuse the complexity of a problem with the simplicity of its solution. And yet we do that all the time. If you took a B complex of folic acid, about 1,000 milligrams, and 2.5 milligrams, all they use in this, and 50 milligrams of B6, 1 milligram of B12 daily for about a month, you could have a big change. And so I'm going to say the following. I've worked with a lot of people in real clinical experience and practice. After all, I'm a registered dietitian, I'm a board certified clinician in nutrition, PhD in public health. So I see people. I'm also I'm a research fellow, senior research fellow at the Institute of High Biology for over 36 years. So you can do something in the research area in a lab, but never know what it means to be sitting in front of someone who's following your advice. And what allows a person to follow your advice, or only partially follow your advice, or not follow your advice at all? And what are the outcomes? Not on just the person in front of you, but a group of people. It's a very complex field because you're giving out information, not knowing how will that information be applied. And how it's applied is important. So someone might take a store-bought B complex. It's not very potent. Now notice the two things that are in here are generally in micrograms. For example, if you have folic acid is generally 400 micrograms, or B12, it's 500 micrograms. And it takes 1,000 micrograms to make a milligram, and they're saying 2.5 milligrams of folic acid and 1 milligram of B12. That's 1,000 micrograms. So this is high potency. But I would have included vitamin B1 at 50 milligrams, B2 at 50 milligrams, along with what they did. But they got good results. But what's the best results? Well, you got three options here. One is say, hey, I work in a very polluted city. I work in India. I work in where you can't even see the hand in front of you. I work in Singapore. I can't see my hand if I hold my arm out, but I have no choice. Okay, there are circumstances in life where you don't have choices. You have to adapt to the environment you're in. So you get an air filter, but most people get an air filter that doesn't filter out very much of the real pollutants. And these pollutants, even the ones you can't see, where you think the air is clean because you look out, oh, it's clean. Well, that's not true. Think of being a truck driver, a cab driver. Think of being one of the people who spend their whole day traveling around. That's constant pollution. So get yourself one of the ones that filter that you put into the lighter. The best ones are the ionizers. What's that? They secrete thousands to millions of ions, and they trap and neutralize airborne particulate matter. I wear one around my neck every time I go into the public, every time I get on an airplane, every time I go to a movie theater, I have one of these around my neck. Now, there's lots of different varieties, and they're all good, but that's very important. Also, when I'm on a plane, I put a shield. It's a simple, well, visualize a soldering person's mask. You know, it's all metal with a little glass that you can see through. Now, this is all plastic, and it covers from here to here, from ear to ear. That means that there's no direct contact with your eyes where you can get infections, nose, and mouth. And then that is the best two ways of protecting yourself. So you're getting about a 12-inch barrier of protection with an ionizer around your face, your breathing space. That's good. Then you're protecting anyone who sneezes, coughs, or whatnot. Because a lot of particulate matter when a person sneezes is hanging in the air. And it can hang in the air for a long period of time, for hours. If there's a wind in that room, if there's air conditioning, it can keep going all over the place and land everywhere. But it's not landing in your nose, your mouth, and your eyes. That's where you get infected. Just a simple idea that that's what we should be doing. Also, people live near the ocean or lakes, rivers, unless the river's polluted, they are getting the best air because there's a constant breeze and there's constantly clean, fresh air coming in, unless it's coming from China, in which case all those two coal-burning gigantic, and these are gigantic power plants that they're opening every week. Every week, they come right across, that pollution, soot comes right across the Pacific, pollutes everything in its way, and ends up causing massive amounts of pollution in California. And I remember years ago, we're going back 25 years ago, there was a study where they had a bunch of autopsies done on young people, people in their teens and 20s who died by car accidents or whatever in Los Angeles area, and virtually all of them showed tiny little holes in their lungs from air particulate matter. And that would have come from China. Yet nothing's been done. And that's unfortunate. So try to get out of harm's way. Yesterday I had someone I know for a long time, a friend, tell me that they have some problems now, including in their lungs. And I said, well, you're living in a very polluted area. Why don't you consider moving? Oh, no, I like the area. Okay. So you're willing to sacrifice your health because of where you're at, as if there's nowhere else you could live and still be happy, but places that you could be healthier. Well, then it's an inconvenience. Okay, so you're telling me you're addicted to your comfort. Yeah, something like that. And now you took the vaccines where you didn't have to, and you took the vaccine, the boosters. Yes, and now you have all these litanies of 13 different conditions gone wrong. Yeah, unfortunately, yes. And some are serious, like dementia. Yeah, and that scares you because then you're not going to be able to continue the work you're doing because that requires being a critical thinker. Yes. So why did you choose it? You're right. But why did you choose the vaccines? Well, peer pressure, family pressure. I see. And what exactly are those same family and friends doing today to help you to detoxify from the spike protein and to stop the body from being able to assimilate in your arteries and your veins the self-organizing nanolipid particulate matter that's killing a lot of people and is a high percentage of people got the boosters? Well, nothing. I see. So you'll take someone's advice when they pressure you. But those same people who pressured you, you took their advice, and now there's a bad outcome, they don't want to hear about it. Did you attend the 10.5-hour session I did on how to detoxify from the spike protein? Yeah. Did you do anything? No. Okay. So you're typical of my audience. You'll listen, but you won't actualize, right? About 95%, unfortunately. Think of how healthy people would be if they actually... if they found that the material was reasonable and based upon good science, good common sense, they used it and used all of it. Wow, what a difference now comes. But in this case, you're smart enough to know what is right, and yet you intentionally choose everything that is its opposite. And now you want me to help you. Wow. Try being in my shoes, people. And especially when that and when your own family members make mistakes they shouldn't have, don't listen to you any other time, but now they want to, what's the answer? What's the solution? Make it simple. Also, from the University of Auckland, which is New Zealand, a positive experience in your close relationships is associated with better physical health. Ah, Now, you probably already knew that. You didn't need a scientific study to show that. But social relationships influence physical health. And especially people who are working together, exercising together, doing something they both are harmonizing and really enjoy doing. So according to research in Social, Psychological, and Personality Sciences publication, scientific journal, both positive and negative relationships impact upon your body. Negative relationships impact negatively, positive relationships positively. Negative relationships, let's say you just have a problem in your relationship with coping with daily stresses, like blood pressure and heart rate, all those can cause further problems with your heart and your health and your immune system. And all stress negatively impacts the immune system, along with bad diet, lack of exercise. So it's not difficult. Only have relationships where someone is sharing that which is positive and reinforcing the essentialness of your being. All right? That's the latest on health and healing today. We're going to take a break. And for those of you who are out there, some of you will continue on with the program. Others say, okay, I got the health nutrition. That's all I want today. But there's a lot more coming, some really interesting stuff. Oh, by the way, Northern Arizona University and George Washington University just had a study that said bacteria from meat likely cause more than a half million urinary tract infections in the United States every year. One more reason not to eat meat, and yet more people are eating meat than ever before. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Hi. Nice to have you back again. We're heard all over the world. And I'm going to be giving you a few questions that I'd like you to call in and give us your opinion. Again, you might be on spot, but I listen to everything and I don't censor. I believe in having an open forum for ideas. In my world, everyone's invited to my table. You may not want to come, but there's always an invitation. I'd like to hear what you think, and then we can have a discussion. Here's my point. Why is it that so many people chose, in your opinion, again, your opinion, to get vaccinated when they had already heard all the reasons to be cautious to their homework? It was unsettled, it was unproven, it was fast-tracked, and there was an enormous campaign to shame people who did not get vaccinated, treating them as if they were secondary citizen. In fact, in Israel, a good example of that was their government's official policy. You couldn't go out. You would lose your job. You would find it very difficult about even to buy groceries. They had apartheid, vaccine apartheid in Israel. We also had people who were yelled at, screamed at, fought because they didn't have a mask on. People arrested. One guy in a kayak alone in the San Francisco area in the ocean, and he was arrested. What does this show about us as a country? Because now virtually everything, when I say everything, I mean every single thing you were told turned out not to be true. Now, whether or not they knew it was not true, or whether or not it was premeditated, or whether or not they had malice aforethought because they were making money off it, I can't answer that. That will still unfold after lawsuits and whistleblowers and others come forward. But virtually everything you were told, mask, no. All the evidence shows it didn't work, and the scientific studies there. The test, no, that didn't work because they were doing too high amplification. If then 13 repetitions, meaning magnify that virus 13 times, then they could have told that you had the virus. The symptoms were those of a flu. The treatment, now we're seeing that upwards of 100,000 Americans died because of the drug they were given, the only drug which had never been conducted a study on it in humans. In a long-term study, there was one in Africa, but it was not even for the same virus. Not even the same virus. And there was a 54% death rate with that. And then now intubation. We should have been giving people hyperbaric, not intubation. And now all of this killed a lot of people, tens of thousands of people. And yet the things that would have saved lives, we prevented. We actually attacked the people. The doctors, state medical board said, we'll take away your license if you offer any of these drugs, even though they were FDA approved and completely safe drugs, and they have an efficacy. Hundreds of studies showed they worked. And yet none of that was acceptable to any journalist in the United States. which shows you either the dumbest human beings on Earth or then the most complicit lapdogs for the deep state. All the networks. So you were lied to by everyone, including Pacifica people. And that's not unusual, and I'm not surprised by that. So, but not by this show. We were right on every single issue. We save lives. The Daily Beast and these other people, well, look at what they wrote. Now look at the reality. So here's a question for you. Knowing that you could have saved 90% of the people who died, knowing that we had good, real good scientists, including Nobel Prize scientists, hundreds of thousands of scientists and doctors who were against everything that was done and signed the Great Barrington Declaration, putting their careers at risk, why is it that the average American is still not wanting to see an accounting? Where was the Wuhan virus originated? Was it manipulated and with the intent to make it a bioweapon? There's evidence showing that's the case. Why won't we allow that in our media as an open discussion? What's wrong with the American public? Not the scientists, mind you. I'm not talking about what's wrong with those politicians who are sociopathic. They're not all. What's wrong with the media that is complicit in misinformation only in today's world? What's wrong with all the woke and critical race theory and all the other idiots? We know what's wrong with them. They stand out like a naked person walking into St. Patrick's on Easter Sunday to take communion. We know there's something wrong with them. We shouldn't be around them. We shouldn't trust them. We should never give them power. The problem in America is not those who have taken power and abused it. It is not those who manipulate and lie as a standard bearer. It is the silent majority. They're the problem. The professional class, they're the extra problem because they're smart enough, educated enough, successful enough to know how to do critical thinking, and they've chosen not to. I'm asking, why? Why have we become a nation of idiots? Why have we become a nation of subservient sycophants? Why? Why do we stay silent in the eyes of every atrocity and genocide? Why? The silent majority is the biggest problem in the world today. Not Klaus Schwab. He's an idiot. Not his, you know, little puppet master running around telling us that we're all stupid and worthless and useless eaters. Harari. No, the World Bank, you know, the International Monetary Fund, for decades we've been telling you how corrupt they are and how bad they are and how they bankrupted every poor economy in the world, including all the countries in Africa that took their money and couldn't pay it back, and they took their natural resources through their structural adjustment, etc., and asset confiscation. Now, we already know about them. So why is everyone staying silent? Why do the parents stay silent when their kids are 4-year-olds are getting pornography? Why? Just a question. I'm not going to give you my thoughts. I've been writing essays on this. Over 100 essays I've written. Deep, not superficial. Read them. Go to GaryNola.com. I want to know what you're thinking. 888-874-4888. Now, when you're thinking about what to call in and share with us, and I hope you do because we've got some very wise people in this audience, you're going to hear now from Rodney Harris. If you don't know who Rodney is, Rodney came in, was working a long time ago with Jesse. Jesse was helping to manage the Progressive Radio Network and the Progressive Radio Voices from that network. And now Rodney is there taking the helms, and he's got people working with him. We're going through a whole renovation. We're building a new state-of-the-art studio. We're moving to a new location where we have more room, where we can have streaming, green screens. We're going to set up a whole studio just for citizen journalists. How about that? Average people who don't have degrees from Columbia School of Journalism, but instead are concerned and they share information with us. We're going to have a studio just recording what they say in short clips and longer clips. Like today, it would be Diane Addison out in California, one of California's best known private chefs. She's a gourmet vegan chef. And she just sent us an issue today about, quote, 20,000 farm workers poisoned, 11,000 fatalities worldwide, and from pesticide poisoning. And then they ask, quote, pesticide poisonings on farms around the world have risen dramatically since the last global assessment 30 years ago. It's not surprising considering the global government is in cahoots with the pharmaceutical industry, are making sure that the poisonous from every single direction. They make billions of dollars off cancer drugs, Alzheimer's drugs, autoimmune drugs, etc. And like with everything else that is part of their malicious agenda, there's not enough coverage on the dangers of pesticides. She's right. This deadly substance, which is used to control, prevent, and eliminate pests, poses serious health to us. She's right. Acute toxicity exposure to high levels of pesticides can cause immediate symptoms such as nausea, dizziness, headaches, seizures, respiratory problems, and even death. She's right. Chronic toxicity, long-term exposure to low levels of pesticides can cause chronic health problems like cancer, reproductive development disorders, neurological damage, immune system dysfunction, and endocrine dysfunction. She's right. And it goes on from there. Also, the biggest thing it's doing to nature, it is killing. It is killing the bees, neonicotinoids. Now, we have an EPA, utterly worthless, and in my opinion, should be abandoned completely and started over, because it's been completely compromised by special interest groups. The USDA, totally compromised. CDC, totally compromised. FDA, totally compromised. National Cancer Institute. I wrote the first article that published in any national publication. My co-author, Robert Houston, and I, he's the brother of Jean Houston, the great female philosopher, and he's one of America's shy. He's very shy. He doesn't like coming on the air, but he's a master researcher. And we did the first article, won the Audi Award, Best Investigative Journalism, back in the early 1970s, to show the corruption of the entire cancer establishment. And yet, nothing has changed. Nothing in our farming practices. Nothing in genetic engineering is being added in. This is a statement from a widow, quote, of someone who died from this. He was just 50 years old. For years, one of my husband's jobs was to tend to lettuce fields where we worked in Greenfield, Connecticut. Right after spraying pesticides and weed killers, he would go into the fields working with the soil with a short-handled hoe so that the lettuce could grow. He could get really close to the ground, breathing in the dust and also the chemical residues that was there. A few years before he died, Algerando developed a severe respiratory condition. He couldn't lie down because when he did, it felt like he was drowning. A doctor told us that he needed a lung transplant. We waited, but no donor was found. His breathing worsened to the point that he needed to be hospitalized, put on a ventilator. One day, as the nurses were putting him ready for his walk, he suffered a stroke. I rushed to his side. He died there in my arms, saying, "My kids, my kids." This truly heartbreaking story is really common. And yet, what have we done? What has each president of the United States done? Which each president selection from industry, the very polluting industries like Monsanto, the top people Monsanto, then now head USDA and other agencies. No one's done anything at any time in my lifetime to protect the workers except Ralph Nader. And those outside the system. The system is completely 100% corrupt. So 100 years from now, it'll be different deaths, but always from something the government could have prevented, the media could have exposed, none of it happened. Thank you, Diane Addison. So we're selecting you as our citizen activist for this week. A couple weeks ago, it was Valentina Farsi. In fact, she won $1,000 and an award for being Citizen Journalist of the Year last year. So I want to hear from the citizen journalists in here, and we're building a special add-on to our studio, our new studio when it opens, that will have the streaming service just for your voices. I hope to have several hundred for that. But Rodney's in the studio right now, and we have a new service, and we've had it for about a year now, and it's called A Classroom on the Air. And I film it each morning. And it's just me looking into the camera and talking extemporaneously on an issue. Today, I was going to talk about chelation therapy, but instead I chose to talk about the zone and what happens when you go into the zone and what is the zone and how do you get there, how it's a spiritual connection. It was 40-some minutes long, and every day it's a different topic. You can go to Gary Noll YouTube. You can go to Gary Noll Rumble, the Gary Noll Library, Film Library. You go to Odyssey. I don't play it on my noon show because I do health nutrition clips there each day. So, Rodney, you have welcome today. Say hello to our audience.
Hello, everyone. Hello, Gary. How are you?
Thank you, Rodney, for the good work you do and all the other Kyle. We have a great team there, Sharon, who's there doing the archive and listening to programs, et cetera. We have, two more people that are coming on board. We have new programs coming on. But today, I would like for you to take a moment and just, you've selected them, tell us what people are saying after they watch and listen to the Classroom on the Air. All positive information, by the way. Nothing political, nothing intense. All right?
No problem. Now, what we have is our first comment from Anthony. Anthony says, Gary's great, and Gary gets it. Jim said, the immortal Gary Nall will live forever. Eric commented and said, amazing show. Thanks again, Gary. M commented, this will be required to be listened to by all high school students. That's 500 students. They will be required to leave a comment as well. Carol took the time out to comment and said, I love the Classroom on the Air. Thank you very much, Gary. You have Dan, he writes, Gary, excellent commentary. Thank you so much. We have XX says, ooh, the truth hurts. Thanks so much, Gary. Hurts to hear, but very helpful. We have Nelson that wrote, wow. Gary, from WBAI to YouTube, good to see you, Gary. Even got one of your books, Get Healthy Now with Gary Nall. Los Angeles Healing Art says, thank you. We love your background, and what a nice space. Eric comments and says, Gary's hair is on point. How did he get to look so how did he get it to look so great at his age? Rich commented, Gary Nall is very inspiring, and following his show for years will add years to your life. And a last comment here, we have an amazing testimony by Mr. Gary Nall. Thank you, and we're praying for Miss Utrice in continuing her process. Great lessons today.
Well, that was nice. Utrice, as of today, is doing 5 miles a day, 5 miles from 10 feet to 5 miles. Blood pressure, normal. Diabetes, non-existent. Normal blood sugar. It's now going into the 80s. Before, with two medications, it couldn't get below 200. Now, with 9 medications gone, and her normal, her breathing is normal, her pulse rate is coming into the normal range. She's lost 60 pounds, and her strength is coming back, clarity is coming back, and there's no mass of cancer in her lungs that can be found by the latest imaging. And 3 separate physicians have reviewed all this and gone over this with her. So she's feeling very good and wants to thank all the people out there for being in support of her in her journey back from certain death to a hopeful life. She'll be on once she reached 90 days. That's another 30 days. We'll have her on for a day to talk about her journey and what we can all learn from it and what people in the audience who have some similar problems might learn from it. Thank you very much, Rodney. We appreciate it. Now we're going to go to a clip. And then after this clip, if callers call in, I'll be happy to take their calls. This is an important clip. And this is a clip that concerns one of the worst genocides for a short period of time. Remember, you're talking about almost 900,000 people killed in like 90 days. Now, if this were World War II, you'd be talking about somewhere around 50 to 75 million people dead from the same period, if it were based upon the same amount of killing in the same period of time. This is Christopher Black. He is an international lawyer on human rights, and he's talking to a group, and can't play it at all because I want to get time at the end for you to call in. But listen to what he has to say, because this is the story the media will not touch. This is the story that no one will acknowledge. He's condemning a lot of people by name, and if he were wrong, he would have been sued into oblivion. No lawsuit against him. Here's the story that no one in the world wanted to hear. You're hearing it today.
What I wrote a long, almost a book about all the criminal methods used at these tribunals to control the trials and come out with fixed outcomes. You've heard from Professor Mazayev and Dr. Laughlin about the illegality and illegitimacy of these tribunals under international law, but not many people know what actually goes on in the trials themselves and how they are controlled, or how they try to be controlled. And I'm going to talk about the Rwanda tribunal specifically because it's the most familiar to me, and because the war in Rwanda is used time and again by the United States in its propaganda to justify its wars of intervention, so-called. The United States claims that the violence that occurred in Rwanda in 1994 would not have happened if only America and others had acted instead of standing by and doing nothing. But now, after 15 years of trials and investigations, we know that America and its allies did directly intervene. It was they who controlled that war, and it was they who unleashed violence of an unprecedented magnitude and savagery simply in order to overthrow a regime that blocked their way to access to the resources of the Congo. But I first want to go back to President Milosevic for a moment, which I hadn't planned to do, because of something a previous speaker said. When I first met President Milosevic in 2001, I was asked to make a report for the American Association of Jurists on whether his arrest was political or not. And I went to Serbia and was allowed, surprisingly, to meet with him. And I asked him why he thought he had been arrested. He spoke very good English, as you may know. He said, two reasons, Mr. Black. First, I'm a communist. And second, he used much stronger language than this, but he said, second, I told the Americans to go to hell. That's why I'm arrested. That is for political reasons. And in 2001, after the attack on New York, I had a conversation with him in which we discussed that attack, and I asked him what he thought. And he said, it's very strange to me the Americans are accusing Osama bin Laden of being involved in that attack. I said, why? He said, well, because in 1998-1999, our security services detected Osama bin Laden's presence in Kosovo with his Mujahideen under the command of American Army personnel, killing people and killing civilians and creating terrorist acts in various places. I personally phoned Bill Clinton and asked him to remove bin Laden and his Mujahideen from Kosovo, and he flatly refused. So I can't understand why that man would now, a few months later, be attacking New York. The point of saying that is that often I was asked by reporters if I had met Milosevic and what he'd say. I reported that to two journalists who printed small articles in a German and French papers. When I got back to Canada a couple of weeks later, I found a fax from the ICTY registrar telling me that they track everything I say and write, and that because of what I said in that interview, they were not going to let me practice at the ICTY. In other words, I was blacklisted, and I remain so since. The point of these tribunals, why they were set up, is basically propaganda. That's their only real role. The propaganda is to put out a story about the war in which they're concerned, with which they're concerned. And the propaganda is meant to demonize the regime which has been overthrown, or the government which has been overthrown, and to cover up the real role of the United States and its allies in that war. And that's the only role these tribunals really have. Now, then you have to accept, if you accept that point, that the accusations they make in these tribunals are false. And in my experience, they are, with all the accused. Why would they have to then put out false propaganda, if the massacres or crimes they say took place? Well, the fact is they didn't. Despite what Mr. Sunga said, after 15 years of investigations in Rwanda, it turns out that the invading RPF forces did most of the killing, and the UN was directly involved and helped overthrow the regime and shot down the plane that killed the president of Burundi and the president of Rwanda and the Hutu Army Chief of Staff on April 6, 1994. As Boutros Ghali told the Canadian writer on Rwanda, Robin Philpott, in 2004 in an interview, he said, quote, "The Americans are 100% responsible for what happened in Rwanda," unquote. Clinton's big lie has been accepted that the Americans did nothing in Rwanda. That big lie has been accepted and acted on because of the propaganda campaign that accompanied it in the media. And the key to that propaganda campaign are the show trials at the Rwanda Tribunal, set up and financed by the same NATO countries and Soros-financed NGOs and private corporations as financed the Yugoslav Tribunal. In January 2000, General Augustin Ndindiliyimana, who was the chief of staff of the National Police in Rwanda and the most senior ranking officer in the army, in the military in Rwanda, was arrested in Belgium on an indictment issued by Carlo Del Ponte. It's odd because he had been allowed to come into Belgium in June 1994 by Willy Claes, then the foreign minister and later secretary general of NATO, who issued a telex to the Belgian embassy in Kinshasa saying, allow him into Belgium because he has saved the lives of many Rwandans. And everybody knew, who knew anything about the Rwanda situation, that General Ndindiliyimana had committed no crimes and had done everything he could to save lives. It was speculated in the Belgian press that his arrest was for political reasons, and indeed, 11 years later, on May 17, 2011, when the initial trial judgment was released, the trial judges stated that the arrest was politically motivated. Now, this is a very astounding and unique statement from any of the judges at any of that ad hoc tribunals. No other judges have said such a thing. And it is surprising to us because the judges had been openly hostile to us all the way through the trial. Now, as I said, he was considered during the events in the war of Rwanda between 1990 and 1994 to be a Hutu, respected by Tutsis and Hutus alike. He is married to a Tutsi. He has relatives who are Tutsis. His children are part Tutsi. It's quite clear that his gendarmes tried to protect civilians wherever they were. So why was he arrested? There are several reasons, including the fact that he knew too much about what really happened in Rwanda, because he knew and testified that United Nations forces and American forces and others, despite Clinton's denials, were directly involved in the shoot down of the plane and the launching of the final offensive by the RPF in 1994, during which most of the people were killed. But it quickly became clear that the prosecutor was using his arrest to pressure him to give false evidence against other accused at the tribunal. Now, the criminal methods they used were many and constant, and I can't detail them all. But they began on his arrest. Two prosecution staff came to Brussels and told his then lawyer, the indictment is just a formality. We only issued it to get him to Arusha, where the ICTR is based in Tanzania, to interview him. He's in no real jeopardy. So they did contest the extradition. He went down voluntarily. He was immediately thrown in prison. The statute says, the rules of procedure state, that an accused must be brought before a judge immediately on arrest. He was held for 4 months incommunicado and not taken before a judge until April 28th. And the reason was quite clear, that they wanted to psychologically weaken him and soften him up. The same method they used on the Prime Minister, John Kambanda, who was held incommunicado in Dodoma in Tanzania for 9 months in a hotel, being threatened by two Canadian police officers every day until he signed a confession, which he never understood. And when he asked for a trial, he was denied one. In any event, in June 2000, I was asked by Ndindiliyimana to be his counsel, and I agreed and went through the procedure to get on the list and to be assigned as counsel. But their immediate reaction was to try and stop me, and they told him I wasn't experienced enough, I couldn't speak French, neither of which were true. And they tried to get him to take other counsel that they preferred. And this is a common tactic at these tribunals. And it's now the norm at the International Criminal Court really effective counsel are prevented in many ways from acting in these trials, and they try and fix the accused with lawyers who are directly connected with Western intelligence agencies or lawyers who only will put up a token defense. The first thing I did was get hold of the indictment. It was not an indictment, as you would know it. The simple statement that X committed X, Y crime on X date. It was a 65-page propaganda tract setting out the mass media version of the war, all of it false, all of it meant to prejudice the accused in the eyes of the judges, but especially meant for prosecution press releases. More shockingly, entire lines, paragraphs, and pages were blacked out. The names of the co-accused were blacked out. We had no idea what the charges were and who the co-accused were. The duty counsel, on his first appearance, had the temerity to state to the judges that how could this man plead to a document that was half blank? The judges studiously ignored him. When I arrived in July 2000, the first person I met in the hallway that my first day there was a woman that approached me and told me she was chief of the prosecution staff. She also told me she was an American Air Force colonel. She asked me to meet me the next day, and I did. She came in with 20 other people, obviously to intimidate me, and immediately offered a deal if he would testify against certain people and give false testimony. We refused. We said, there's no case. We don't know what the charges are. That happened multiple times over the next 4 years. There were multiple offers for him to plead guilty and even finally drop all the charges if he would give false testimony against other accused. We repeatedly refused. On my next trip down, a couple of months later, I found he had disappeared from the UN prison. I went there and they refused to tell me where he was. It took me 3 days to find out where they had taken my man. I found out he was placed in the UN safe house again, to try and isolate him psychologically. And it took several weeks of demands to get him put back in the prison. So for the next 4 years, we faced constant harassment, obstruction. We didn't know what the charges were. We made repeated demands for a speedy trial. They were met with shrugs of indifference, repeated demands for relevant disclosure. We got nothing except irrelevant documents, thousands of them. We demanded resources to do investigations. We were denied them except for token amounts. Team members were not paid. We learned through sympathetic contacts in the UN security office that defense office phones and fax machines were tapped. Lawyers were followed in hotels, cafes, on the streets. Lawyers' hotel rooms were broken into and their computers tampered with. Attempts were made to put women next to us who worked for the Tanzanian and Rwandan intelligence services. Rumors were spread inside the UN prison to try and discredit counsel with prisoners. A Scottish lawyer named Andrew McCartan came to see me in Toronto in 2003. He had just been in New York, where he tried to see Bill Clinton. And he told me he had information about how the US military and CIA had penetrated the tribunal and was going to send me some documents. 2 weeks later, he was kicked out of the tribunal. A week after that, he died. His car went off a cliff in Scotland, and the police have no evidence of what caused him to go off the cliff in Scotland. After that, I was paid a visit by a major in American Army Intelligence and the American State Department Research Intelligence Bureau, who wanted to interview me on our strategy, what my client's views were of African politics. Luis Arbor, as you may know, did an investigation into who shot down the plane. The Australian lawyer Michael Hourigan found out who shot down the plane. It was the RPF and the CIA. She killed that investigation, closed the file, and therefore covered up mass murder of 20 people on that plane. To this day, that file is being kept secret. In 2004, defense lawyers organized a strike at the tribunal because of bad conditions, harassment of defense counsel, and prisoners. The leader of that strike, Jean Daigle, a Parisian-based lawyer, was kicked out of the tribunal, and we never held any strikes again. The prisoners made a list of lawyers who they believed were Western intelligence agents. They tried to plant in the cases. In our case, we've detected five people over the years who were working for the prosecution as spies in our case and tried to influence our decisions. They refused to allow us to have co-counsel we wanted. They tried to trap and arrest my lead investigator, who was a former major in the gendarmes and was at that time a Dutch police officer. But the most surprising thing was when the trial started 4 years after he was arrested, the prosecution stood up and launched into a totally different indictment, alleging massacres we'd never heard of, personal murders the general was supposed to have done we'd never heard of. We demanded a delay to prepare for that case. They said no. So we had to prepare a case on the run. We then found out that all the witnesses they produced were Hutus who had been held in Rwandan prisons for 10 years and more without charge, being tortured. And they were scripted. They were all came in with scripts they were told to say. And some of them on cross-examination broke down and stated that they had been told to testify falsely and said they were inside the prisons in Rwanda. The Rwandan regime had set up schools in which prisoners were given favors and promised release if they would give testimony against the prisoners of the ICTR, and the prosecutors of the ICTR were involved in these schools. There were daily angry confrontations in the courtroom between the judges and the defense counsel because they refused to allow us to cross-examine properly, make motions, make submissions. We learned the Witness Protection Unit was actually, instead of protecting defense witnesses, was giving information on them to the prosecution and to the Rwandan regime. In 2005, during my cross-examination of a Belgian army colonel who was involved in drafting what is known as the Dallaire genocide facts, we found out that the translators in the translator booths were reading from scripts given to them by the prosecution instead of actually translating the answers given by the witnesses. We demanded a halt to the trial and investigation. They refused to do that. During the same cross-examination, it was proved that the Dallaire facts was a forgery placed in UN files by a British Army colonel named R.M. Connaughton, based at Camberley, Sandhurst, in Surrey in Britain. The prosecution was so embarrassed by this revelation, they've never mentioned that facts again, even though the New York Times mentioned it in April and gave it a big spread again. The Dallaire facts proves there was a plan. It is a forgery. It was established to be so in 2005. In 2006, I'll wrap it up by saying that during the trial, there were a series of events like this and daily occurrences in which the prosecution used every illegal trick in the book, every illegal method, which no one would tolerate in any civilized society. And it's quite clear that these tribunals reflect the society in which gave them birth. Law is a reflection of the social, political, and economic structure of a society. And these tribunals reflect the present structure, economic, political, and social of the world as it is, as the Americans and their allies try and establish a world order. And it seems to me that the only way that you can have justice in this world, universal justice, if there is possible to do that, is to reestablish sovereignty and equality of nations and adjust an economic society, and then you can have true justice. And how you do that, I don't know, but I leave that to you. I'm sorry I ran out of time. I have a lot more to tell you, but I can't do it.
We're making an effort to bring him on the program so he can have a whole hour or 2 hours. But so what he has just told you, if you're able to believe it, everything you were told about the Rwanda massacre, who is responsible, how it could have been stopped, and wasn't because of the French, because of the Clintons, our State Department, and Deep State. And who is the best friend of the Clintons? Kagame, the president, who is being called out as the participant in all this. All goes to this resources that they were trying to steal. Now, the National Security Agency, since it monitors every phone call and electronic communication in the world, they would have had all that information on those phone calls in downing the plane that had two presidents of two African countries, which then signaled the beginning of the genocide. You've been lied to at everything, about everything, all the time, 100%. So we're going to play you what others won't. because we're not beholden to anyone except the truth. Before we go further, I said I would take your calls. Rich from New York. Rich, your turn. You're on the air.
Thank you, Gary. I'm responding to the questions you raised at the beginning of the show about why so many people rushed to get the vaccine when there were concerns about, and I'm paraphrasing, rushed to get the vaccine when there were concerns about the effectiveness of it. And the answer to me is pretty obvious. It was a total terror campaign that was run, and the media is totally controlled. You talked about the government agencies being corrupted, extends to the media and the industrial complex, as well as the military, and all working in unison. All the things you're talking about on all your shows are tied together. But I remember speaking to friends of mine a month before COVID became a big thing, and them all said, well, you know, I'm going to wait and see how things play out with the vaccines. I'm not going to get the vaccine. By the time, you know, a month later, the fear campaign was spread as widely as it was, and people were in a panic. Those same friends were rushing out to get the vaccine, and I just saw it before my eyes, people being manipulated and losing their putting aside their common sense. And once again, the narrative being put out there on all the medias that they had trusted was one voice and the same thing, and they accepted it. I was fortunate that you were putting out different information during that time, Gary, and I'm seeking the truth, and you were a great platform. But if I didn't reconnect to your show when I did and start listening during this time, I don't know what I would have done, but it's possible that I would have gotten vaccinated as well.
Okay, here's a simple question for you, Rich, and anyone else who wants to call in. If you did not have the benefit of what we share on this program, all the experts we brought on, all the commentaries, all the scholarship that was done, presenting the articles on how to stimulate the immune system, how to protect yourself if you should be infected, the importance of natural infection, not to get a vaccine on top of natural infection, every single thing we said was correct, 100% correct. Everything they said was wrong, 100%. Then why do people still go to Politico and the Daily Beast and Wikipedia and MSNBC and Rachel Maddow? Walk away from all of them. Otherwise, then the problem is you, not them. Because if a person says, weapons of mass destruction, and we trust you, and we go in and we kill a million innocent civilians and leave a toxic legacy with depleted uranium. Gaddafi must go. Laugh, cackle, Hillary Clinton, that seems all she's capable of doing. And we do. We don't just kill him. We sodomize him with a sword. And that's worth laughing, according to Hillary and the friends she surrounds herself with. And it was all wrong. Everything that was talked about Libya was wrong. It was all lies. Barack Obama, is he held accountable? Never will be held accountable, nor anyone else in power. Why? It's because of race. Nothing has to do with race today when it comes to these issues. It's power of the elite. And who are the elite? They're a class to themselves. The same reason that everyone stood and applauded and cheered and smiled for Will Smith when he won the Academy Award just a few minutes before he had gone up on stage and just smacked and physically assaulted Chris Rock, a small guy. But he knew he could get away with it, and they know they can get away with it. And the military-industrial complex can get away with it. Monsanto can get away with it. Even when Monsanto is caught now settling tens of thousands of lawsuits, they were wrong. But what about the media protecting them and the lawyers protecting them? For over 60 years, the tobacco industry protected over 100 years. So at what point do you accept that you're the problem?
Well,
when you no longer are capable of critical thinking. So if people keep lying to you and you keep going back, the same people are lying to you, it's like having sex with someone who gives you herpes. Next time they give you syphilis, next time they give you gonorrhea, next time they give you chlamydia, next time, and you start thinking, maybe this isn't the person I should be having sex with. There's a cognitive disconnect in our society. We're believing and trusting with our lives and our freedom the very people who've shown themselves to be nothing but pathological liars. Do you see what I'm saying, Rich?
I do, and I understand it totally, and there is an individual responsibility, and I'm really thankful that I'm I use common sense and I question the things that don't add up to me. But also that I have sources that I can go to and rely on and trust for that information. A lot of people haven't discovered those sources. They're still trusting the same.
Hold on. What you just said, that's important what you just said, and I thank you for that. There are people who have not found those sources. That's not the question. The question is, should they have tried to look further than what they did? Did they get lazy in their search and go to what was predictable instead of looking for the truth outside of their own comfort zone? You did. All right? You found the truth outside of your comfort zone. They too. Never mock, never ridicule, never shame anyone who got the vaccine or is suffering because of that. And they're the spreaders. They're the ones who are leeching the virus into others who may not be aware of it. Now, if they talk about something, just say, are you going to continue putting your child up for a holy sacrifice? Is this the Inca Empire where children were brought up so their hearts could be cut out and then shown to the gods and then the next child? I mean, we are at the bottom end of the hedonic scale. We are tribal. We are not just tribal, but we're tribal and primordial. And that's dangerous. That's critical race theory. That's the woke culture. That's our identity politics. That's a consumer capitalist-based society. So good for you for getting out of that and not becoming a victim. Thank you very much. I appreciate your call. I'll take more calls in just a moment. But I'm going to introduce something today. How about this? Something brand new. I've been spending some time buying back the rights to all my books from Random House and Penguin, Putnam, New American Library, all the biggest publishers. I've had monster bestsellers. I bought them all back. We now have like 23 titles. 2,000 of them showed up yesterday, including some I don't even have. And because I gave it along the way, some of my hardback first edition books and hardback out, I gave them away. And I got to tell my office in New York that there's a different price on to get healthy now. Anyhow, what we're going to do is this. I want people to start to read again. I want you to become your own resource. I want especially the health counselors and the wellness counselors out there, the citizen activists, build your own resource library. And I'm going to help you do it. I spent an enormous amount of money to get all my rights back, and I got them all right back. That's where I want them. I'm not going to publish any more publisher. Do it myself. But what I'm going to do is I want to have you have the best information available anywhere on how to deal with every condition and disease imaginable, even on life issues, etc. And we're going to start today with something I know you don't have. And it's a little book. You can read it in a year because it's 1,000 pages long. Let me just look here. How long is the damn thing? It weighs about 20 pounds. It's 1,055 pages. It's called Healthy Woman, Healthy Life, A Woman's Book for Healing. Wow. Okay, here are some of the chapters. And it's in this book. And my goodness, there's like, oh, wow. Alternative health resources. There's arthritis, birth control, breast cancer, cervical cancer, dysplasia, fibroids, chronic fatigue syndrome, dementia, depression, diabetes, digestive problems, eating disorders, endometriosis, and environmental problems, fibromyalgia, food allergies, heart disease, herpes. Yeah, there are cures for herpes. HIV and AIDS, hormonal imbalances, menopause, infertility, lupus, memory loss, menstrual cramps, migraines, multiple sclerosis, and that's just one section. I've got all these different sections. It gives you everything you need to know. And its original price, let me look on the back of the book here, is in Canada, it's $45. In the United States, $35. Now, that's one book, but I'm going to give you a package today, and you're going to love this. I've got the big book in this particular offering, and it's again, one of these little books. I'm looking at the back. It has got 1,077, 79, 80, 81, 1,085 pages. It's called Get Healthy Now. Luann uses this every day in her counseling of people. This is the ultimate book that everyone needs to have. The complete guide to preventing, treating, and healthy living. Get Healthy Now. And the third book in this package is The Food, Mood, Body Connection. nutrition-based and environmental approaches to mental health and physical well-being. So you're going to get, and I'm not even looking at the back of this book. I don't have the time to go through all these pages right now. Let me just squeeze back here real quick, because this is a small book by my standards. It's only about 500 pages. So you're getting over 2,400 pages of information, qualified scholarly information that can help you. This is just the beginning of your library, okay? So now you're going to get a library. You're going to get started. You're going to help everyone. You're going to help yourself. And now, if you miss a program, you don't get something that we're doing, you'll say, that's okay. Let me go to my Gary and All Health library. Now, I couldn't have done this last week because what it costs me, they generally give a 45% off or discount sometimes if you buy enough books, you know, like 100 or 200, they give you 50%. Well, I'm starting off giving you a 50% discount. And I had to pay for the books. I had to pay to get them shipped here. So this package would normally run you $89.90. That's a bargain. But today, the three books, The Healthy Woman, Healthy Life, every woman should have that. That should be in everyone's household. I remember once Paul Newman's wife was on television in San Francisco, and I'd just been on the same show in the morning. It's a three-hour show. I went back to my hotel, and I turn on, and there's Joanne Woodward talking about, oh, I wish I'd met Gary Noll because we have his book, The Complete Handbook of Nutrition, on our bedside table. We refer to it constantly for everything. And so I ran back down to the station to say hello to her. And that was back in 1972. So now you can have what you need to get started on being the healthiest you can possibly be. I'm going to ask you to call a number. You're only going to pay $44.95 plus shipping, and you're going to get the Get Healthy Now, the paperback edition, fully revised and updated. Okay? This was a national bestseller, New York Times bestseller. Okay, and I'm going to give you the number, so I want you to write down the number real quick. You can call the following number, 877-627-5065. Again, 877-627-5065. And you'd be getting the book cheaper than what I could call my publisher and get it. And you're going to get them sent out today because Josh in our fulfillment center in our office in New York is there. And you can walk in and pick it up from Neil in our vitamin closet, 35th and 5th Avenue, 35th Street and 5th Avenue, 12th floor, 646-926-5430, 646-926-5430. That's for Neil in our vitamin closet. This is beginning something exciting and new, and I expect everyone to participate because I've gone through a year and a half of working. They didn't want to give me back the rights. Well, we're still selling very well. I bought back the rights. And to buy back the rights, I'm sure that they put in there their anticipated loss of profits from not having the book. So I did this as a sacrifice for our audience, so you can have all the information. And this is just the beginning. This is what we're offering today, these three books, over 2,400 pages of the best information on every condition imaginable. Okay? Now we're going to go over to Utrice Lee, who's standing by with an outstanding program, as always. Over to you, Utrice.